Monday, April 2nd, 2007, upon further review, episode number 37. Well, Easter is coming, and that makes us think of one thing, the Easter Bunny. A lot of similarities between the Easter Bunny and upon further review. We both bring joy to the world, we put smiles on your faces and laughter in your hearts. But the only thing we don't do is bring you eggs in baskets, and we don't really hop around a lot either, but you get the idea. Then the basics, just like the Easter Bunny. Okay, upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
And we want to welcome everybody to episode number 37 of the show. It seems like a long time since we recorded our last episode, but I don't think that's actually true. I think it's just that we were maybe ready to do our next episode earlier, but then all this other stuff happened, so we feel like we've delayed even though we haven't. So yeah. Maybe that's part of it. Because we miss you guys so much, you know, when we're not here doing the show, we're just like, when is it going to be the next time we can actually do this show? You know what I'm saying?
No, I don't have that feeling.
Clea right now, by the way, is wearing a NYPD tank top, which is pretty funny because she did a comedy routine tonight. She didn't want to wear her shirt that she wears at work, so she got an NYPD tank top.
Well, the problem is I was meeting up Andy, who lives down in Times Square, and so this is the best I can do.
So Clea did that, and so now we're here doing the show. So a couple things that I want to mention before we get started on the show itself, which is some emails and comments that we've gotten from people. First of all, I wanted to send a shout out to our friend and fan, Aloui, who was the one who had asked us to do the rap request last week. He actually gave us, not only did he liked the rap request, the rap review that we did, but he actually sent us an email and then posted a comment on our website, which you can check out if you go to furtherreview.net. And he has a review where he basically talks about all of these different MCs, and he comments about the idea that he agrees that rap has become too commercial. And he doesn't like that. Talks about Nas and, you know, Immortal Technique. And then he mentions other ones, Young Jeezy, Rick Ross, Cameron Hyde's Dipset Crew, Santana, Jim Jones. And he talks about, like, Big Daddy Kane. He points out to me that the reason the whole thing with the You Suck MC, I'm Better Than You aspect of rap comes from, like, rap battling and stuff like that. And I knew that, but I guess, you know, he was just, like, showing me other examples where that's still been the case. He also agrees with you that Coolio is dumb. So he says nobody takes him seriously. So anyway, we want to thank him for sending his comments in and hope that he will continue to stick with us.
All right.
And you guys should go check that out. Secondly, I wanted to quickly thank Steve, our friend Steve from Wicked Good Podcast and Extra Points, who a couple of weeks ago had sent us an email about our hockey review and wanted to know if we were basing it on TV, standard definition TV or HDTV.
And, oh,
you know,
here we go again.
Because he says, you know, if you're watching a game in HDTV, it affects your review because it's easier to pick up the puck.
God.
And the truth is we do have an HDTV, although it's not a huge screen HDTV, which I think may make some kind of a difference. I don't know if it does for sure, but
none of my opinions had anything to do with whether or not I could see the
whether
puck.
Or not I could see it on TV. That's probably true.
It's a very valid point and one that people that have like a really good HDTV always want to bring up, but really
but
all
like,
of my
hockey
points,
HD man, that's where
all
it's
of
at.
My points did not have to do with whether or not I could see the puck. It
right.
had to do with the mindset of the players, the game, the way they play the game, that kind of stuff.
Right. What if the players had, like, a high-definition attitude, you know?
I mean, that, right. If he was, his point was that HD affects the fact that when you see him in HD, they're not actually fighting, they're dancing with each other, then maybe
it looks so much different.
You.
It was blurry. I didn't really realize before.
There
but anyway,
go.
And he also let us know about getting a Nintendo Wii, and he's actually been helping me out with giving me the heads up. And I wanted to report that on Sunday, I was
We're
going up for rehearsal with my band. Of a Nintendo Wii console. Mm-hmm. I managed to get one. I got there 20 minutes early to Toys R Us in Yonkers.
Why don't you give them that website that you used for tracking it?
Yeah, it was www.nintendowiifanboy.com. NintendoWiiFanboy.com, which Steve had given me the information from, actually. So that was good that he was willing to do that.
So it's something like you can check, and then it will tell you like the next day or...
Yeah.
Or you check every Sunday or something, was it?
No. Well, you could actually subscribe to a feed, almost like if you're subscribing to a podcast, and it would send you email alerts and things like that. Or you can
of when different stores are getting them in
right,
stock,
right? Or it's and I think actually Fanboy that was the website he checked. There's also one called Nintendo Wii Tracker, which is okay. The same sort of thing.
All right.
But it was actually really painless. You know, when I got there, it was no problem. You know, they're like 20 minutes early, and they handed out tickets to get them, and you walked in and you buy it, and that was it. So,
All right. So
we will probably, I'm sure, we'll be reviewing the Wii in a future show, and not too distant future. But we wanted to thank Steve for his comments, and you know, for always being a good listener and fan and all that kind of stuff. And then last, we wanted to say hello and thank a new fan of ours, Michael, who says that he really likes our show and that we've actually helped him get through a week at the office, which is, you know, that's good. He said a week or so at the office. So we've got to like pick up the pace clearly we can get there for more weeks.
Well, unless he, this is a job that he shouldn't have. You know, I don't want us to be, you know, enabling him. Staying in a job that maybe he doesn't want. But if he likes his job, but just needs a little bit of like something to listen to while he's doing his job, then I'm glad we could be there for him.
All right. Well, so I guess
I don't
want to
enable him in staying in a job that he doesn't like.
Okay. So you have to be, what we need here is emotional honesty, Michael. If you really like this job,
right,
then, you know, we're certainly happy to keep you involved with it.
Right.
If we're just making it easier for you to put off the moment of, of leaving
of
this terrible
on.
Job, then,
right,
then that's bad.
We can't be a part of that.
Right. So, but we did want to thank him for sending his stuff in, and he had some review suggestions for us, one of which we're going to be doing on this show, actually. So we want to thank him for that and ask him to keep bringing up those suggestions and encourage all the rest of you to do it, too, because we respond well to review suggestions.
We respond well to review
suggestions. That's a positive stimulus for us. So we've got three things on the docket for tonight, as per usual. We're going to start by reviewing the NCAA men's basketball tournament, which has just concluded. In fact, it concluded about 10 minutes ago with Florida beating Ohio State. And so we want to talk a little bit about that.
Should we have done a spoiler alert there? But I guess not. This
a
will come out.
Spoiler alert.
I guess it will come out
no,
like a week after that.
If people have still got this on their TiVo by the time they're reading this, this is your own fault. So we've got that. And then we're going to move on from there to review the new production of Oliver Twist, which is going on. It's by the Theater for a New Audience company, and it's actually going on at the John Jay College Theater. I think it's called the Gerald Lynch Theater at John Jay College in New York. So we wanted to review that and talk a little bit about Oliver Twist. We've talked about Dickens before on the show. And then we're going to conclude by talking about, not a podcast this week, but a webcomic. This is the one that was suggested to us by Michael, which is a comic called Sluggy Freelance, which is a long-running webcomic that's basically science fiction spoof. So we will talk a little bit about it when we get to the end of the show.
Okay.
All right, so let's start by talking a little bit about the NCAA basketball tournament. And you can find the website for this, not shockingly, at www.ncaasports, so that's ncaasports.com/basketball. And from there, you can get to either the men's or the women's tournament. Now, the women's tournament is actually finishing tomorrow, I think, with Tennessee, which is a perennial powerhouse, against Rutgers. And this is actually the first time Rutgers, which is the university in Jersey, it's sort of their, basically the state university, for want of a better term, this is the first time Rutgers has been in any kind of a title game since, I think, 1949, when they shared a fencing title with Army. So, this is a big moment for Rutgers, you know what I'm saying? So that should be fun, and I definitely advise you guys check that out. I am, as people may know, my alma mater is the University of Connecticut, and at the University of Connecticut, obviously, basketball is a huge deal. When I got there, actually, in 1990, I can't believe that's when I actually entered college, they had just won the NIT tournament, and they were starting to build up their legacy. And since then, the men's program has won 2 championships, and the women's has won, I think, 4. And so they're known as a big hotbed for college basketball. So I like college basketball a lot. And as everybody knows about March Madness, which is what the term for this is, a big tournament is put together of 65 of the, quote, best college teams in the country. That's for both men's and women's. I think men's may be 65 and women's 64, but whatever.
Out of how many?
There's a lot of Division I programs. There's probably like 200 and some odd, 250 maybe Division I programs.
Okay.
And they also have Division II and Division III also, yeah. But like Division I is the one that everyone thinks about. And the thing about it is that the, you know, if you get in by winning, let's say, your conference tournament, like a small conference tournament, like the Big Sky, you know, conference or something like that, you can get things like Montana State or George Mason, which was the big story last year, or some university, which you may have heard of, but they're not considered any kind of a big powerhouse. And then they will, you know, go into the tournament, and it's just a one-and-done tournament. So these people can actually face off against, you know, big, powerful teams like Florida and Ohio State and Duke and the University of Connecticut, and can actually, if they just win that game, they can get past them and knock them off. And so there's kind of a charm to it in the sense that
because
you
can it allows
the,
by
the
doing
underdog.
That it allows for I want to say like turnover, but it allows for the kind of like big win if you just pull through
right.
this, it allows for a huge win, a huge upset. It has an upset power.
Right, and that's one of the charming things about it. You know, if you've ever watched one of my favorite sports movies is Hoosiers, which is about a high school basketball team. True story about a high school basketball team, this tiny little high school that ended up winning the Indiana State Basketball Championship, which, if you know anything about high school basketball in Indiana, it's basically like a religion for those people. So,
right.
So it was this big deal, and they beat some
huge
city school.
That and donkey basketball.
And what?
Donkey basketball. They play basketball on donkeys.
It was a stupid Charles Barkley skit.
They actually do it.
I have no comeback to that. Okay.
Oh, so
no daylight savings, but instead they have donkeys. I'm sure. Okay. Anyway. But anyway, so that's kind of the charm of this as well, even though this is college, obviously, and not high school. And the thing I would say about it is it's a three-week tournament. Basically, you have 64 teams. You knock it down to 16 teams. They play two games over a weekend. You knock it down to 16. The next weekend, you play two games to get down to what's known as the Final Four, and that's the big deal. And then they play two games, and the winner of that championship game, which just happened, is the champion of college basketball for a year. And, you know, the thing about college basketball is it's big time sport, it's big time money, and that is an issue. I mean, a lot of these people, you know, will go there for their freshman and sophomore years of college and then will leave to go to the NBA. You know, there's a lot of discussion about whether these are really, quote, student athletes. Mm-hmm. I mean, probably many of them are really students as well, but a number of them aren't. And I mean, I used to watch, you know, college basketball and think that I loved it for the emotion and the passion and the excitement, but I would also watch it knowing that a lot of these kids had SAT scores that were half mine, you know, and they were getting free rides to college. So that can be sometimes frustrating too, knowing that they're not really students, you know, and that they're more athletes than they are students. But it brings exposure to the university, it gets the university money, and so that's part of it as well. And still, I like college basketball despite those drawbacks.
One thing to come back to, though, is that you mentioned how the way it's set up allows for the big emotional wins and upsets and allows for
right.
people to really get into the game.
Yep.
But then does that also lend itself as possibly this year when there isn't any opportunity for an upset, or this year wasn't it like all of the people up were like ones and twos?
Right. They did have some upsets early on, but by the time they got to the last sort of eight teams, they were all basically one seed. Oh, I should mention that, by the way. They're split into four regions, and in each region you're seeded in terms of how you're expected to do. So if you're the number one seed, it means you're expected to win your region. And basically, the final eight had all, it had a 1 versus a 2, a 1 versus a 2, a 1 versus a 2, and a 1 versus a 3. So basically all the seeds that were supposed to get there did, and in the final four you had two number one seeds. So basically the teams who were expected to get there did get there for the most part.
So an interesting thing then is usually you would think, well, if you have, like in other games, like if you get a World Series or if you have a Super Bowl, you think if you get the two best teams there, you're going to have a great game.
Right.
But in this, it sounds like that's not what you were interested in, or I don't know if you're just unique in this, or if other people were like, well, it's not as exciting because it didn't have the potential of an upset.
Well, yeah, it's a combination of that and getting teams that are really interesting. I mean, when my own team, Connecticut, didn't make it, then I was like, eh, you know, then you look for other reasons, and I look then for exciting games. And there were some exciting games early on, but the later games just kind of got... The games were, it was very up and down. There were a couple of very good days where there were amazing games in the tournament. And then there were a lot of the days that were just sort of ho-hum. I mean, you know, even the championship game tonight was, you know, it was a 9-point win for Florida. The game was never really that close. They were always
ahead.
And
why was it? Because they weren't interested? They weren't driven? I mean, why didn't make for an interesting game?
What do you mean?
Well,
no, Florida's just better. I mean, Florida won last year. They brought all of their players back, all of them, which is very unusual. The coach managed to convince them all come back. So they, you know, they lost like four games or five games all year or something like that, and they went in as the number one seed and they destroyed everyone. I mean, they've won. I think 12 consecutive NCAA tournament games because they obviously won last year and this year. This is the first repeat champion since 1992. So part of it is just that having a super dominant team like that isn't particularly interesting. I mean, I know some people talk about
so
the
now
idea
we get
that it's
back
a
into the
dynasty
Greg hating
and versus
the Yankees and because they're a dominant team. And
I don't
upsets
hate them.
The balance or
Well, I don't hate them, but it's true. I don't like teams that so clearly dominate one sport. That's a good point.
Although
that
you
sort
liked
of
it when Connecticut
them.
Was up. There was a time that
but they
Connecticut
didn't dominate,
dominated.
Though. No, they never dominated like that. They just were very, very good all the time. But it doesn't mean. Well, no, it doesn't mean that they lost all the time. They won two championships in 15 years. So it's not like they're blowing people away.
Yeah.
How about the 70s when UCLA won 9 out of 10 championships? Now that's dominance. In a 10-year span, you win 9 championships. That's crazy. Now that would have been a little bit hard to watch after a while because you're just like, what's the point?
Okay. Well, so I guess let's get to the point. Do you think that there are some intrinsic things that lend itself to having problems, i.e. particular issues with college basketball, or are there particular issues with the way that the NCAA is set up? Or
no, I think it's cyclical. I thought the committee did a bad job this year in figuring out some of the bottom teams, because what happens is you have a certain number of teams that get in automatically. Then you have some teams which are called at-larges, and those are basically teams that a committee looks at and says, okay, this team deserves to be in, this team doesn't deserve to be in based on record and computer rankings and all this stuff. And this year, they just did a bad job with it. You know, they left some people out they shouldn't. They got some teams in that they shouldn't have. And so I think the end result of that was just kind of a, even going in, there were some, the matchups were kind of strange. And then the way the tournament broke, you know, there just wasn't a lot of stuff going on. And, you know, this was the first time, I think, that all four number ones made it to the Elite Eight, or this first time in many years, anyway, that had happened. And that just indicates that, you know, there were some teams that were just clearly better than other teams this year. I don't think it's necessarily the NCAA. I just think it was a combination of, I mean, I don't care about Ohio State and Florida. And I didn't find anything particularly interesting about the way either of those teams played. And so, you know, that was basically what it was. I don't think it's anything intrinsically wrong, you know, with the tournament, but just this year it wasn't, you know, as interesting as normal. Going to a college basketball game, though, is tremendous, too, because of the, you know, as I said, the passion, the emotion, and the fact that they actually care about whether teams win or lose, which, you know, if you go to a pro game and you're going to some game in, you know, January against the Celtics and the Hawks, I mean, that's not, you're not going to see people get fired up about that, and you are going to see people get fired up about this. Russ, who's listened to us, says he'd rather have people that have better skill play. So for him, he's like, well, no, it's all about the skill. But for me, I think it's a combination of the skill and the, you know, the passion and the sort of, you know, is the game actually good that's being played? So,
okay.
So I guess for a rating for this, I would rate the NCAA tournament, I think a 7 is a pretty good way to rate it. So I would say either a 7 or an 8, because normally it's pretty well done. It's pretty exciting. But sometimes it just doesn't lend itself. There are years like this where it has off years, I guess. So I would say probably a 7 is a good bouncing one. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So next up on the docket is the Theater for a New Audience. I keep thinking Theater for a New America. The Theater for a New Audience's production of Oliver Twist. And you can find these people at tfana.org/Oliver Twist, OliverTwist.html. And I originally reviewed this for the theater critic job that I do with CurtainUp.com. And so Clea went with me because I get an extra ticket when I go to see these things. And TFANA has been doing a lot of good classical theater for many years now. Clea and I saw a production of Coriolanus, a Shakespeare play, a couple of years ago. And we've seen a production of Shakespeare play called All's Well That Ends Well. So there's just a lot of good stuff that they've done. And this one was supposed to be one of a group of three plays. They did The Merchant of Venice, The Jew of Malta. Merchant of Venice is a play by Shakespeare. Jew of Malta is a play by Marlowe, and then they finished up with this play, which was an adaptation by a guy named Neil Bartlett of the book Oliver Twist by Charles Dickens, which you guys might have heard of before. Maybe you saw the musical or the movie. So, what'd you like to say about it?
Well, I mean, again, this is a unique to New York thing, so we don't want to spend a lot of time on it, but I did want to kind of discuss the book and the way that it was adapted. Again, we've talked about Dickens before, and I think, obviously, the themes are themes that continue to ring true, of people, of societal norms and how people are supposed to do things and how that then plays out to the people that get pushed along through this tumultuous world.
Such as Oliver Twist.
Such as Oliver Twist. The young Oliver Twist gets kind of bobs around on the waves of, you know, ebbs and flows with all of the different societal expectations and belief systems and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting. And it was also interesting to see it done in not the usual upbeat, melodramatic musical form. It was done in play form, and it was done, there were some musical interludes, but mainly it was done, they gave it more depth, I think, and it gave it, you allowed to see the character depth a little bit more because they didn't have to just go into song, and you could actually listen to a lot of the words that they were saying and the meanings behind them.
Well, the guy who did the adaptation, Bartlett, who was also the director, this originally premiered in London, actually, in 2004, and then I think it went through Boston, maybe, and then this is its New York premiere. And he said that he took Dickens seriously, which is one of the things that I, you know, when we talked about this relating to Bleak House, when we reviewed Bleak House, a lot of people, I think of Dickens as kind of like a Norman Rockwell figure. You know, you think of Christmas Carol and all that stuff.
Right.
And the truth is that, I mean, you know, Dickens lived through crushing poverty. He saw it around him, and he was this, you know, brilliant social commentator who was commenting in Oliver Twist about that as well. You know, Oliver Twist is an orphan, and as Clea says, he kind of gets buffeted. I think you called him like a Nerf ball, right? I mean, he just gets like thrown from place to place. And, you know, the play is really envisioned through his eyes, but he is not really an active participant. I mean, he doesn't have a lot of control over his own destiny. That's basically the point. And that, of course, was what Dickens saw around him. So, yeah, there's a real darkness and a sort of violence and a sense of despair about the play. I think it's overcome by hope, as it was for Dickens.
Right.
But that despair has to be laid on pretty thick. And people think of Oliver and they think of, you know, food, glorious food, and all this stuff. And, you know, it was not this... I mean, for example, even the character in the movie, Fagin, who is the sort of head of this this group of boys who are these rogues and thieves, and Fagin is this old man who's kind of their surrogate father, I guess. You know, in the movie, Fagin is like, oh, he's this clever guy, and he's this rogue, and he's everything else. But the truth is that Fagin is malicious and you know, violent, potentially, and all these things. And so this play tried to play that up. I'm not sure how successful it was in that, but it tried to play up the fact that Fagin was to be feared. And everything about this play indicated that. Even the set has these little... this sort of mechanistic quality to it, you know?
Yeah, and it was kind of a cream-colored box of a set with black boot prints all over
set
walls,
back from the main stage.
Ceilings,
it's like in the stage.
At the ceiling and in the floor, almost like just as the people are downtrodden upon, you know, this environment has been stomped on and
yeah, that's
and
a good point.
Upon.
I hadn't thought of that.
In this company, we've always liked their stage.
Yeah, they're always good.
The stages are always brilliant, and the utilization of them brilliant in the way that they interact with the space.
Yep.
So that's been a common theme. When we reviewed Threepenny Opera, I talked about kind of sometimes it's not just the play that you want to review, but also the production company or the acting company, or in Threepenny Opera, it was Roundabout Theater. In this, it is the theater for a new audience. We find that, again, we've seen a few of their productions, and we find across the board, they've been of high quality, directing, acting, stage, costume. So again, you know, if you miss Oliver Twist, keep an eye out for Theater of a New Audience, because that would definitely be probably worth the risk of seeing whatever it is that they're doing.
I hear that it's moving, or no, actually, yeah, no, that's right, right. Yeah, and I was going to say I was heard it move. It was might be moving to another place for an off-Broadway run. I'm hoping that they extend it. They probably can extend it for Theater for a New Audience because they're always doing new stuff. But I would hope that they might be able, it might get extended elsewhere and they could actually transition it, because it's too good for that not to happen. The acting is a very good ensemble performance. I think the one thing that Clea and I both felt about the production was that this production really tries to emphasize Fagin a lot. And the whole point behind it is that Fagin is this outsider because he's Jewish. And that's the connection with the other two plays, is that each of the plays deals with a Jew at the center of the play. And that Fagin, they said, was sort of the same kind of character here, and that, you know, Oliver's an outsider because he's an orphan, Fagin is an outsider because he's Jewish. I don't think that really worked, because I don't think Dickens himself really was as interested in that subject. I think that, you know, he probably would have acknowledged that there was anti-Semitism. Oh my God, how could he miss it, you know, in London. I don't know, though, that the whole point of the play is about Fagin. I think Fagin is one of the sort of influences on Oliver, that he is the guy, you know, or the influence. But even in this production, the last guy to bow was Fagin. So, I mean, clearly they were trying to make him the point of the show.
And that was the thing, too, is that I thought, well, maybe if they had done a better job of expressing what it was about him being a Jew that affected him being an outsider, and how that interacted with Oliver being an outsider for his own reasons. But it didn't do that. It was like kind of this assumption that they tried to force, but not through text or plot or speeches.
Right.
So I didn't quite understand that. But then the thing is, though, that wasn't it like all of but two lines from this play were directly from
taken
the
from
book?
Dickens.
So if it's not maybe it wasn't there,
it's not
and
there,
that's
it's not
why
there. Yeah.
They couldn't do it. Now, again, that's not to say that the theme couldn't been under the surface, but the concept is, of course, it's under the surface, but if it's too far under the surface, then we're not going to really see the point you were trying to make. And to say that you're trying to portray Fagin as one of the influential characters, if not the central twist, core to this play.
Central twist.
Yeah. Then I don't think they succeeded. But putting that aside, as a standalone production, we thought it was very successful.
Well, I mean, that's I was going to say that. You know, we have seen productions. In fact, we even walked out of one. It remains the only production that I've ever walked out of, which was doing such violence to the play itself. That this is the Richard II thing that we saw. It was doing such violence to the play itself that really the play collapsed. Whereas this thing, I don't think emphasized that particular aspect properly, but the production was so competent and so well directed and staged and adapted and acted and so forth that it almost didn't matter. Yeah. You know, and I wondered a little bit, and Clea and I had a discussion about this. The guy who did Fagin is a guy named Ned Eisenberg, who's actually been on, I guess his big thing is Law and Order Special Victims Unit, I think. Mm-hmm. He's this big recurring character. And he's done a lot of, you know, theater stuff. I didn't think that his version of Fagin was particularly, I didn't think it particularly stood out at all, and I thought it was fine, but I didn't think it was like, wow, look at this guy. And I think it would have had to have been sort of like, wow, look at this guy. You know what I was thinking about actually when you brought up Threepenny Opera? If he had been as good as the guy who did Macheath, it would have, I think it might have made that emphasis on Fagin fit more. But because he wasn't that good, I mean, he wasn't
that's
bad.
That's a good point, because there was a lot of Threepenny Opera that Mack the Knife was not in.
Right.
But it was, you still knew that
he was the center
character.
Of the play, yeah.
So, no, it's a good point. I mean, maybe if he had been a more dynamic actor or had been directed to be more dynamic within his role, he may have stood out more.
Right. And, you know, some of that dynamism comes towards the end of the play, but it's sort of at that point
it's a little too late.
Having said that, though, still a very good performance even by him as well, and very well directed in general. A lot of very good startling moments in the set, in the music, in the costumes, and the staging directions, just very crisp, very competent.
Yeah.
And it's such a pleasure to watch professional work being done. And when you see professional work and then you compare it to stuff which passes professional, you realize, you know, what the difference is.
I want to give it an 8.
All right, I guess an 8. It's close to a 9 for me. I thought it was really superb. All right, I guess I can go with an 8. But the point basically is, go, if you're in New York, try to make one of the plays that you go see, if you're going to see any plays at all, go see something by theater for a new audience. It's only a few weeks run, so it's going to be over by Sunday the 15th.
Of April.
So if you're in town and you can see it, that's great. If not, then keep an eye out for the Oliver Twist version, you know, if it comes around to you, you know, to where you live. And if not, then when you're in New York, make sure you check out whatever theater for a new audience is doing, because they're really good. And it was really, this is a superior production. I thought it was really excellent. Okay, last on the docket, we have this webcomic, which is called Sluggy Freelance. Now, it's described by friend Michael as a long-running, almost 10 years webcomic about a group of friends on their wacky adventures, particularly Torg, a geeky, clueless guy, and his friend Riff, a trench coat and sunglasses-wearing inventor. So, I mean, when you've got this kind of stuff. And so we went over and took a look at it. You can find it at www.sluggy.com, sluggy.com. Describe this?
Well, you go on and at the top of the screen, well, actually, no, it's in the middle of the screen, it will say new viewers, click here to view the Sluggy Viewer Guide. And that's going to be important because it has been going on since August 1997. And so it's going to, when you click on that, then towards the middle, you'll say start at the beginning, and you'll click on the start on the beginning link. And then it will take you to the beginning. And so that's important because when they first start, looks like they're just two friends that are maybe computer programmers of some kind in their home. And so it might look like it has nothing to do with adventure and nothing to do with sci-fi. But obviously when you first go to the website, yeah, it looks like they're on some kind of planet or something like that. So obviously over almost 10 years, these characters have developed and there's a lot to be said.
Right.
I like the setup in that way, though, because you can literally start from the beginning and then they have almost like it's pictures, a little forward or backward button. So you can just click to the next one, click to the next one and just keep reading.
Yep.
And so it can become, I mean, I think I just sat down for a few minutes and already I've read through August, September, and October. So, you know, it's a good read, and it's a good setup the way that they've done that.
It's a lot. I mean, it's very, a lot of it is a science fiction spoof, you know, or technology spoof, where they'll bring in things about these two guys who, like, one of the comics I was reading that they recommended, this guy sends his friend Torg, this guy Riff, who's the inventor, sends his friend Torg into this random dimension, which is called the Dimension of Pain. And, you know, when he gets there to the Dimension of Pain, you know, they ask him, this woman who's there, you know, who's in the original world, says, you know, well, what have you done to Torg, who's the name of the guy that he sent away? And Riff is like, well, I sent him away by accident, but I'll be able to get him back in a couple hours. He should be fine as long as he didn't get into the Dimension of Pain. And so he's in the Dimension of Pain, and all these demons are, you know, like, you know, are going to rend his flesh. And so they talk about rending his flesh, except, and, you know, they try electrocuting him, and they say, so have we broken your will yet? And he says, no, why? I have a pet bunny. And the pet bunny has scratched him and done far worse than the demons could do. Mm-hmm. So it's that kind of thing. Like, they do sort of combination of goofy humor and tech humor and geeky humor,
you know,
and stuff like that.
The Windows 95 and Bill Gates and all that kind of stuff.
But it's been going for, I mean, like, this started back in August of 1997. Yeah. So that's some serious staying
power. And it comes out, at least it looks like it comes out every day. I don't know if he was consistent all of those 10 years or what, but so it has that. It has a few other features to the website as well, of
message boards, mm-hmm. forums, things like that. In fact, some of you, I'm going to post this on their forum. So if you're from the Sluggy forums, hi. Welcome. So they have a lot of forums and things like that. But it's amazing to me that this stuff is out there. I mean, it just sort of continues to prove. I mean, obviously, the internet's so huge, we can't know everything about it. But this thing has got this huge legion of fans and people know about it, obviously.
How would you know about this? Do they promote this anywhere? I mean,
I guess in webcomics. World, I don't know. Yes. I mean, that's a good question. I don't know.
But I guess he probably has not enough of a following that he wouldn't even need to think about going outside of that field. I mean,
yeah, one would think of. There is a Sluggy store where you can get caps and books, and because it's actually been produced in some book versions, the Megatome, you know, Sluggy Freelance Megatome, and there's a whole bunch of versions, which is pretty neat. A little bit of this reminds me in style of a comic called Zippy, which used to run in things like the Hartford Advocate and the Village Voice. If you could think of like the alternative newspapers where you guys live, whether it's in America or outside of America, it's that kind of thing. You would see comics like that. Now, I used to hate Zippy because I thought it was so obscure that it was just sort of like, all right, so you're saying something vaguely liberal and obscure about something that I'm supposed to know. It was just not funny, and that's sort of part of the point of having a funny comic. This, though, is not like that. I mean, the style reminds me a little bit of it, but they always bring it back enough that you never feel like you're way out at sea.
It's not that obscure.
Right. Although there's no way you're just going to jump into the middle of something. In fact, they even admit that in the Viewer's Guide.
Right.
They actually say, if you've come here wondering what the heck was that on the front page, that's why. And so because of that, it's something that you definitely have to go back and sort of catch up with. But it's good. I mean, you should, maybe this will be something which some people can listen to, say, at work, Leah, where websites routinely get blocked and
maybe we'll see.
Places.
We'll see if it gets blocked. I'll try it out.
If they've somehow caught up to Sluggy.com.
Sluggy already.
If they find Sluggy, we know it's all over from there. But what do you want to say for reading?
Oh, goodness. Gosh, gracious me. Well, again, you know, for what it is, I want to say a 6 or a 7.
Okay.
Because, again, the differentiation for me is a little unclear about what of the comic versus the comic book.
Right.
This is very much a comic.
Right.
Right. So kind of the purpose of the comic is to semi make a statement, but also for there to be it be funny.
Right.
And I thought the humor was a bit obvious, but also, I don't know, maybe because I was starting the beginning in 1997 when, you know, may not have been as obvious. I don't know.
Well, I was going to say, people are so obvious back in 1997.
Well, no, I've had another 10 years,
two
right?
You guys walk into a bar. We're so much more sophisticated. No, I mean, like, you know, part of that, too, the other thing it reminds me of a little bit is sort of the D&D comic style, and people who are Dungeons & Dragons fans will know, you know, Dungeons & Dragons comics have a little bit of that obviousness, too. They're sort of funny, but they're kind of funny in a, oh, boy, sort of way. But I don't... But see, I keep thinking that there's other things that they add in here which keep it from being that entirely. I found comics like this that are very irritatingly obvious and inside jokey, and I didn't find that about
that.
This. So,
a 7.
I'm willing to go with a 7. I think that's reasonable, and I think it's pretty neat. It'd be interesting to sort of check out a book and see what a book with this many comics would be like.
And this is definitely for, I'd say, teenage age to adult.
Right. Oh, which we should have mentioned about the Oliver thing. I forgot to mention that. That is not for kids.
Yeah.
It's definitely something which it even says on the website, not for kids under 13.
Yeah, not for kids.
So this same thing. I mean, I would say that this is the kind of thing where, you know, if you're 13, 14, it's not bloody particularly, but it's certainly, it's sort of a little bit more adult and themed.
Yeah, a few of the images could be a little disturbing if your imagination is, you know, strong.
Right. Or undeveloped. If you're a blank slate, like many of our children are.
It wasn't where I was going. I was saying that if your imagination is able to fill a slate very cleanly, like fill in the blanks of where he's starting, it could be a little...
If you have an Etch-a-Sketch imagination, in other words.
Okay, great. You could just keep going on, couldn't you? This is back and forth. He was playing a little bit too much of the Wii tennis last night.
Yes, I was. That was awesome. So anyway, okay. So we will give Sluggy a 7 out of 10, and you guys should go check it out.
All right.
So that's going to do it for us for this week. We already have a bunch of things lined up for review next week. We've gotten a DVD that was sent to us for review, and some other things, and so we'll be checking that out. But please continue to submit review requests to us and tell your friends and all that kind of stuff. And thank you as always for listening. We will check you guys out next week. Upon further review, I'm Greg.
I'm Clea.
See you next week.
The proceeding was a presentation of Upon Further Review, hosted at www.furtherreview.net. As usual, all rights are reserved. If you liked what you heard, please vote for us at podcastalley.com, vitalpodcast.com, and add us to your list of favorites at podcastpickle.com. You can leave us a comment at www.furtherreview.net, drop us a line at upon@furtherreview.net, or give us a phone call or send a fax to 206-339-UFR1. That's 206-339-8371. And lastly, don't be afraid to express your opinions. We know you have them. Let them out. Feel the power. Or you could just blindly accept whatever we tell you is fact. That'll work.
Bravo!
I loved that.
Oh, it was great.
Well, it was pretty good.
Well, it wasn't bad.
Well, there were parts of it that weren't very good, though.
It could have been a lot better.
I didn't really like it.
It was pretty terrible.
It was bad.
It was awful.
It was terrible.
Get him away!
Hey, boo!
Boo!